Hello. Before this episode starts, I want to give a general warning for the next couple of episodes, which involve a story of a woman being kidnapped and raped, as well as a lot of other things that people may find difficult to listen to. This storyline spans chapters 29, 30, and 31, so if you want to skip past it, you can go straight to chapter 32. To go into more detail, the story involves a woman being kidnapped and raped by a monster who holds her captive for over a decade. Her kidnapper abuses her and threatens her for attempting to contact her parents and escape. She repeatedly apologizes for her own rape and is blamed for it as well, both by characters in the story and somewhat by the narrative itself. And she has two children from this rape who are murdered by the protagonists. On top of that, the story also features other gendered violence and alcohol-fueled violence against women. As I said, if you want to skip all this, you can continue from chapter 32. Otherwise, I hope we can still make this enjoyable while handling the subject matter with tact that it needs. Welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West with myself, Kriva, and my friend, MJ.
Hello!
So, this chapter is going to have a lot in it. So, there's going to be mention of bride kidnapping, marital rape, kind of gendered violence in general, and people who are more or less tortured to death. So it's going to be fun.
Yay!
So, when we left off, Sun Wukong had been banished and returned home to the Flower Fruit Mountain. And Tripitaka promptly got himself kidnapped by the monster Yellow Robe, who, when we left off, Baji and Xiao Wu Jing were fighting.
Yep. And he had, I came to appreciate his fashion sense.
Yes.
Which exists only in my mind as I have conceptualized it.
So the chapter starts off with a poem that the footnotes note is to the tune of Moon Over West River, which is the little bit of music that I use a rendition of as the intro and outro to the show. At least I think it is. I found a couple different pieces all with that name, and some of them sounded pretty different to each other to me, but I know nothing about music, so I hope I picked, the right one.
I mean, is there anyone from that time who's around to correct you?
There's music historians who could.
I mean, yeah, but come at me, bro. I was actually saying to Quiva at the start of the podcast, I got a lovely message on Facebook from someone who listened and who was doing their thesis on Journey to the West. Thank you for the lovely message if you're listening. If I still haven't replied, I'm sorry, I'm a trash texter. And you also got a message from someone who was doing a thesis. So, like, do you think our academics could beat up their academics?
Considering my degrees are in physics and applied maths, I feel like it's just kind of...
Oh, I meant academics as noun. Plural noun. Like, can we assemble a team?
So the person who DM'd you is going to fight the person who DM'd me?
No, I was going to say, like, if any music historians... You know what? I've lost my train of thought on this, but you know, we have academics who like us and are on our side. If any music historians have a bone to pick with you, you know, it's.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I think I'm probably a bit slow on the uptake tonight. I'm a bit tired, and let's just leave it
at
that.
But it was a nice humble brag about your degree in mathematics and physics.
Just thought I'd just remind everyone.
Yeah, just to remind everyone, Quiva's a genius. And if you needed reminding, I'm a dumbass. So.
I abandoned any like real intellectual or academic pursuits to just work in software though, because that way I get money.
Yeah, I abandoned any academic or intellectual pursuits to make jokes, which gives me no money. So I think you're still coming out ahead. I have three quarters of a BA in English and sociology, and I can fix basic IT issues. So, well, I say I can, I won't,
Yeah.
but I can.
Your stand-up is very good though.
Oh, thank you.
If we're ever allowed to attend stand-up gigs ever again, and you're in Dublin and MJ's performing, you should go see them.
Yeah, you should. I give people in the audience compliments. I do. It's true.
So, we are meant to be talking about a book, I think, of some kind.
We are, yes, sorry, digressions abound today. The Sun Wukong and Trippie Tucker have just had their what I'm sorry, read to me as a bad breakup. Tripitaka kidnapped by the guy who's matched purple with yellow and possibly can pull it off. Sun Wukong, now the defender of the Flower Fruit Mountain once more.
And so where we left off at the very end of the last chapter was Zhu Baji and Xiao Wujing fighting Yellow Robe. So the narrator immediately informs us that the two of them would have absolutely no hope of winning, even if there was 20 of them. But they managed to hold their own because they are secretly being helped by the Six gods of light, the six gods of darkness, the guardians of the five quarters, the four sentinels, and the 18 guardian spirits of monasteries, because they can't let Tripitaka die. So these lads haven't been mentioned in quite a while.
Yeah, they got backup.
Yeah, so all these gods are secretly watching over and helping Tripitaka. And they are, in this case, helping Zhu Baji and Xiao Wujing not get immediately slaughtered.
I suppose it's all for the greater good.
So, meanwhile, Tripitaka, tied up inside, is sobbing when Yellow Robe's wife, whose name is Hundred Flowers Shame, approaches him and asks him who he is. Hundred Flowers Shame is a very interesting thing to name your daughter.
Yeah, there's some big Catholic mama vibes off that. Hundred Flower Shame. Oh God.
He calls her Lady Bodhisattva. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, but Tripitaka calls basically like all pretty women he meets Bodhisattva, which is interesting. It's not a female title or anything. There's male Bodhisattvas in this book as well, but he always uses it as a compliment for women. Maybe it's meant to be a comparison to Guanyin or something. I'm not really sure what the origin of that is.
Yeah, well, I mean, and any comparison to Guanyin is a compliment of the highest and most reverent order. You know, there's no flattery here. We're being honest and praising and just being wary.
Anyway, she tells him her story. So she's the third princess of the Precious Image Kingdom, which is about 300 miles to the west. And 15 years ago, she was kidnapped by Yellow Robe and forced to marry him, and she has two children by him.
Oh.
And she's been trapped here with him all this time and was never able to so much as send word back to her family.
Oh no.
There's also a footnote that says the name of the kingdom could also be possibly translated or interpreted as Precious Elephant rather than Precious Image.
Precious elephant?
Yeah. I'm not sure why those are the same word in Chinese. That would be interesting to look up, but I didn't think to do it.
I will look that up. Yeah, it's elephant phenomenon and outward appearance, apparently. Oh, Chinese chess is an elephant piece. I like that. Oh, interesting. The derivation for the elephant meaning to the likeness meaning is explained in Han Feizi, China. Anyone who speaks Chinese. But from around 221 BCE, men rarely see living elephants. As they come by the skeleton of a dead elephant, they imagine its living form according to its features. Therefore, it comes to pass that whatever people use for imagining the real is called Chinese character for elephant.
Really interesting.
It may be apocryphal, but I don't know why there's a ton of elephant skeletons around and no actual elephants. I think maybe there's a mystery there, but there's a reason. This is from Wiktionary, however, so you know, take it as you will. And if you do look it up, there are some delightful pictures of elephants. apparently, elephants are cunts once you get close to them.
Wiktionary has 20 different definitions for this character.
Yes. But yeah, there's a reason behind it. Oh, baby elephant. Baby elephant.
Elephant ivory tusk. Elephant again, but in brackets on the backside? I don't know what
Elephantars.
They mean by that. Symbol, emblem, shape, figure, appearance, phenomenon, complexion, image, picture, portrait, sign, indication, imagination, law, legislation, principle, calendar, imitate, or to follow the example of, to trace, to outline, to depict, to resemble, like, or similar to, historical, a vague designation for southern barbarians, and the name of a commandery of Han China. I don't know what a commandery is, and also a surname.
I think elephant's a really cool surname.
I guess commandery is a region under the control of a commander. Okay, anyway.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a podcast where we discuss a book sometimes.
So we are talking about Hundred Flowers Shame from the Precious Image or Precious Elephant Kingdom, whichever you prefer. Or any of the other 20 things I just listed.
Yeah.
So she tells Tripitaka that she'll ask Yellow Robe to let him go if he promises to deliver a letter to her parents on his way to the West. So she hurries off to write the letter and gives it to him after untying him. He tucks it up his sleeve and she tells him to sneak out the back door while she goes to talk to Yellow Robe. And after leaving out the back door, he decides to hide in some bushes and wait. So the princess heads out to the front door and calls down Yellow Robe, interrupting the fight. And she tells him that a golden armored deity visited her in her dream, and that when she was young she made a vow that if I find a good husband I would ascend the famous mountains, visit the immortal abodes, and feed the monks. Since I married you, ours has been such a great happiness that I never had the opportunity to mention this to you. Just now that golden armored deity came to demand that I fulfill my vow. He was shouting at me so vehemently that I woke up with a start. So you may notice that this is more or less the exact same ruse that Tripitaka's mother used on her kidnapper / husband.
I really hope these ladies have a whisper network. It'd be real nice for them to have that support.
Well, I mean, she said that she hasn't been able to get any word back to her family, so I don't think so.
Yeah. That's fair.
But she tells him that she thought it was just a dream, but when she woke up and saw the monk tied up, she decided to beg Yellow Robe to release him as a way of fulfilling her vow. Yellow Robe calls her gullible and he says he thought it was going to be something important, but the monk doesn't really matter, there's plenty of other humans to eat, so he'll go along with it, it's fine. She also asks him to let him leave by the back door, which he doesn't really see the point of, but sure, grand.
Yep.
He calls down Baji and Wu Jing and tells them to head out to the back door, find their master, and take him away. but if he sees them in his territory again, they won't be spared. So they don't look a gift horse in the mouth, and they immediately head to the back door and shout for Tripitaka, who enters from the bushes he was hiding in, and they head off together. Baji and Wu Jing bicker about whose fault it was, the whole mess was, until they find a place to rest for the night. They're getting on still great without Wukong.
Famous, yeah, nothing has gone wrong.
So they can.
Although, to be honest, they got out of that. And how many times has Tripitaka been kidnapped with Song Wukong?
Yeah, fair.
It seems like this is a normal Tuesday for them, really.
So they continue on for a while, day after day, till 299 miles later, they reach the precious image/elephant kingdom. The precious image elephant. No, that doesn't really work.
Image elephant?
Yeah.
I like it. I like image elephant. We should probably stick to one or the other for recording, but I'm enjoying image elephant.
We'll stick to image elephant then.
Yay!
So, a poem praises the kingdom and compares it directly to China, and in fact it names numerous palaces that it has that were like actual buildings and functionaries and institutions in China at the time this was written. And it reminds Tripitaka so much of the Tang court that he almost shits himself.
Oh no. Does he fall off his horse?
He doesn't, but the actual line is, our scripture-seeking elder recalls the Tang court and his bowels almost burst. So, like, I don't know how you can I don't know how you can interpret that other than he almost shits himself with nostalgia.
It's right there. It's right there.
Yeah. They check into an inn and rest for a while before Tripitaka heads off to court to get his passport stamped. I call it a passport because it's just kind of the function it serves, but the term the book uses is travel rescript, and it's more of an official letter written by Emperor Taizong, and it's quite long. And okay. I want to read the whole thing. The travel rescript of the Tong Son of Heaven, who succeeds under the guidance of Heaven to the throne of the Great Tong Empire in the south, Jambudvipa continent. Though we humbly acknowledge our poor display of virtue, we are the lawful descendant of a great heritage. In the service to the gods and the government of men, we try to be vigilant night and day, as if we were approaching a deep abyss or walking on thin ice. Some time ago, we failed to save the life of the old dragon of Jing River, for which we were chastised by the Most High August One. Our soul and spirit, drifting to the region of darkness, had already become a guest of impermanence. Because of our allotted age was not yet exhausted, however, we were indebted to the ruler of darkness, who released us and returned us to life. Thereafter, we convened a grand mass and established the ritual field for the dead. It was at this time that the one who saves from afflictions, the Bodhisattva Guan Shi Yin, revealed to us her golden form and enlightened us with the knowledge that the West had both Buddha and scriptures, able to redeem the dead and deliver the orphan spirits. For this reason, we now commission Xuan Zang, Master of Law, to travel 1,000 mountains in order to acquire such scriptures. When he reaches the many nations of the West, it is our hope that they will not extinguish the goodly affinity and allow him to pass through because of this rescript. This is a necessary to be sent document, an auspicious day in the autumn of the 13th year in the Zhenguan period of the Great Tong, an imperial document.
Okay, so I feel like any customs official is going to read three lines of that and then skip to the end, number one. Number two, what happens if you cut only 1,000 mountains? Are those measured? Are those...
I think that's just, a way of saying a lot.
Yeah. I would really love, though, if they found someone who was just like, I'm so bored and I want to abuse a loophole here.
I do like the idea of the customs officials just reading the first few lines and skipping to the end and just missing the entire midsection where the emperor has written out, by the way, I died and returned from the dead. And yeah. Then a god appeared to me and told us to acquire scriptures. And he's just like, okay, yeah, emperor, the pilgrimage.
Like,
okay,
I see emperor fine. Here. That's
this,
okay.
This all seems like, normal. This all seems fine.
I mean, who's got time to read all that? You know, particularly if you're a bureaucrat, this is just your day, and you know, you're stamping people's papers, and this bald fuck rocks up to you and just hands you a novel. It's just like, you're allowed to be here, sure, fine, go enjoy, have a nice day.
So it's noted that there's already nine seals stamped to it, and the king of the precious image elephant kingdom adds his own to it. So I think this is the first time it's being mentioned, them going through this, but apparently they've already gotten this document stamped 9 times before.
Ah, is this going to be relevant?
Not really. I just wanted to make note of that.
Fair,
But I
fair.
also want to remind everyone that the real Xuanzang, the actual historical person, left the country illegally. The existence of this letter at all is like just a massive whitewash of what happened. Let alone how the king of the precious image elephant kingdom fawns over how wonderful China is and how excited he is to add his stamp to an official document from China. And that just like this fawning over like the legality of this illegal pilgrimage.
This is, look, it's all bureaucratically correct and signed for.
Yeah, also it says we are the lawful descendant of the great heritage. I think I'd forgot to double check this. I think Taizong was like the third ever Tang emperor.
Also, didn't he kill like his brother and his father?
When the real he did, yeah. Or sorry,
Lawful then.
he killed two of his brothers, and then the like day after he murdered his two brothers, his father, the emperor, just happened to decide to abdicate in his favor.
Lawful, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, again, just to emphasize, they're saying, this is a they're a descendant of a great heritage of this dynasty. When the real Xuanzang was born, the Tang dynasty hadn't started yet.
Yeah, your man knew which side his bread was buttered.
Like when the real Xuanzang returned to China, he like immediately he got an official pardon. He actually got an official pardon before setting foot back in China, which is very smart. But then he lived the rest of his life was like completely under the patronage of the emperor. He wrote kind of a travelogue for the emperor, basically describing the countries he went through, and then he was kind of looked after for the rest of his life as he translated the script, the books he brought back. But yeah, it's just I really want to emphasize the ahistoricalness of this entire letter.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
So after getting the passport stamped, Tripitaka gives the king the letter from his daughter. Before having an official read the letter, the king explains that their daughter disappeared 13 years ago and they've not seen a trace of her in all that time. And in trying
Well,
to
have I
get
got news for you?
information about her, they banished countless officials and beat countless ladies in waiting and eunuchs to death. So that's nice.
Now that seems unnecessary, and I'm not sure what the connection is there.
Well, I guess they were probably her servants that they were like, where did she go? You must know what she did, blah blah blah, and just beat them to death trying to interrogate them. That's what I think the implication is here.
Yeah, that's not great.
Also, 100 Flower Shame's letter is even longer, and very depressing. So it reads, the unfilial daughter 100 Flower Shame touches her head to the ground 100 times before the Dragon Phoenix Palace to honor Father King of the highest virtue. Long may he live. I bow also before the Bright Sun Palace to my Queen Mother, Queen of the Three Palaces, and to all worthy ministers, both civil and military, of the entire court. Ever since it was my good fortune to have been born into the Queen's Palace, I have been indebted to you for the countless acts of grievous labor you undertook on my behalf. I regret that I have not done the utmost to please you, nor have I discharged with all of my strength my filial duties. It was on the 15th day of the 8th month 13 years ago that Father King, on that lovely evening and auspicious occasion gave his gracious command for banquets to be prepared in the several palaces so that we might enjoy the moonlight and celebrate the glorious festival of Immaculate Heavens. During the moment of festivity, a sudden gust of fragrant wind brought forward a demon king with golden pupils, indigo face, and green hair who took hold of your daughter. Mounting the auspicious luminosity, he carried me away directly to an uninhabited region midway in the mountain and absolutely forbade me to leave. He exploited his fiendish power and forced me to become his wife. I had no alternative but to suffer such ignominy. For these 13 years, two monster children were born to me, all seeds of this fiend. To speak of this, in fact, is to corrupt the great human relations and to pervert our morals. I should not, therefore, send you such an offensive, insulting letter, but I fear that there would be no explanation should your daughter pass away. As I was thinking of my parents with deep sorrow, I learned that a holy monk from the Tong court was also taken captive by the Demon King. It was then that your daughter wrote this letter in tears and made bold to obtain release for the priest so that he might deliver this small document as an expression of my heart. I beg Father King in his compassion to send his noble generals quickly to capture the yellow-robed fiend at the current moon cave of the Casserole Mountain and bring your daughter back to the court. Yours will be the deepest favour to me. Please pardon my disrespect in writing this letter in haste. And whatever has not been said, I hope to tell you face to face, your disobedient daughter, Hundred Flower Shame, kowtows again and again.
That kid was fucked from the get-go, wasn't she?
Yeah, that was just like a giant letter apologizing profusely over and over again for being raped.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That poor kid.
Yeah. Not great.
Oh no. Maybe she can go and live with the wallpaper lady.
Oh, if only.
Maybe they can help each other with their trauma and, you know, raise their children together. Have a happy life. Doesn't sound like she should be back there either, quite frankly. Also, they named her 100 Flower Shame.
Yes.
I don't know if it's culturally insensitive for me to, like, is that a normal thing? It's like, have we named girls Dolores, which just means pain. Actually, weirdest name I've ever seen was when I worked tech support in a call center. And I was dealing with the account of a lady named Anhedonia Jones. And I don't know if anyone who's had depression, their ears might have been picking up at that point. Anhedonia means a complete absence of pleasure.
That just makes me think of that, like, Terry Pratchett bit where he's like, because it's common for to name daughters after virtues, then I can't remember the character. Character decided that she should name all her sons after vices.
Oh, we had Bestiality Collins.
it kind of reminds me of, like, it's like the Catholic version of that logic.
Yeah.
It's like, well, being happy is sinful, so therefore I need to name my daughter after the highest possible virtue, which is being fucking miserable.
Yep, Dolores. Or you know, even in Irish we've got Brona. With Bron in Irish means sadness.
Yeah, sadness or sorrow.
Sadness or sorrow. So yeah, there are lots of Irish girls walking around with the name Sorrow. But in this case we can very much quickly tell that these people are just shitty parents.
Yeah, it's this letter just makes me sad.
Yeah.
So it makes the king sad as well, but probably not for the right reasons. He weeps for a long time before asking who wants to lead the soldiers to rescue the princess from Yellow Robe, and he is met by his court by complete silence.
Oh, you guys too?
Absolutely no one is volunteering for this.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So the king starts crying again, and a load of officials step forward and prostrate themselves, and they say, you know, we may have studied military tactics, but all we know how to do is march troops in formation and pitch camps. They have no idea how to fight a monster.
I mean, that might be true, but also I'm starting to believe that this is just a toxic environment all around.
I mean, true. I also kind of find it kind of funny, and this we'll come back to this, I think, in a little bit, but how, like, they don't say, we know how to fight with an army. They don't know how to fight against an army. They have read about it.
Okay.
Like, they've read about fighting. They've never actually, like, been to war.
Oh, God.
But anyway, they suggest maybe the priest can do it. That's their only suggestion. The priest maybe can do it.
Is Tripitaka just looking at them at this point going, are you fucking serious?
No, he says he couldn't possibly do anything, but he has two disciples who might be able to. So the king calls him insensitive. He asks him, you know, what if you have two disciples, why didn't you bring them to court with you? We could have at least have fed them.
Have you met these guys? No, trust me.
Yeah, well, Tripitaka explains, they're very, very ugly. And he was really worried they might scare the king from their appearance. And the king laughs at this and he asks, you know, does he really think he'd just be scared of looking at them? And Tripitaka goes on to explain that, you know, he describes what they look like. And the king says, okay, and he sends out a messenger to the inn to summon them. And as soon as they walk in the door and the king sees them, he falls off his throne in shock.
It's not a horse.
A throne is kind of a horse that doesn't move if you think about it.
Yeah, it's a metaphorical horse.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the throne could move if it's like on a palanquin.
This is true.
But anyway, he says it's a good thing that Tripitaka described them to him first, because if he wasn't prepared, he might have been scared to death. The king asks which of the two of them is good at subduing monsters, and I quote, "Foolishly, idiot answered, old hog knows how."
Old hog's that your name now?
Old hog.
Is that what you're trying out? It's not going to catch on.
I think he's copying how Wukong calls himself Old Monkey.
Yeah, it's not working for him.
But again, I just like the phrasing here. Foolishly, idiot answered. the author is not subtle in what he thinks of Zhubaji. So to show off, he uses his magic to grow to 80 or 90 feet tall. The king is suitably impressed and agrees to send him off, and he flies off to try and fight Yellow Robe. But Wu Jing is worried that he won't be able to do it by himself, so he asks Tripitaka to go and help him. They barge in the door and they immediately start picking a fight with Yellow Robe again. There's a big long poem as usual describing the fight, and there's some dialogue in it. It's not clear whose line this is. I assume it's Wu Jing, but he shouts at Yellow Robe, "You raped a princess and brought her country shame," which is just kind of like almost being good about, like,
you're nearly there.
Yeah, it's bringing the country shame is not the bad part of that.
No
thing,
it's really not. That poor please find wallpaper, lady, and you know, you guys can work on yourselves together.
Yeah. Yellow Robe's only response is, "Mind your own business."
Ooh.
So, you know how I mentioned that the guardians were helping them in the first fight to protect Tripitaka?
Hmm.
Well, their job is to protect Tripitaka, not Wu Jing and Baji. And he's safe 300 miles away at the precious Image Elephant Kingdom. So they stayed. They stayed with him, and the fight goes very, very badly for Baji and Wu Jing. And realizing that they're fucked, Baji turns to Wu Jing and tells him, "I need to go take a shit. I'll be back in a minute," and runs away and hides in the bushes.
What? For fuck's sake.
And without anyone to back him up, Wu Jing is immediately taken captive and tied up inside.
Yeah. They're not the brain trust.
No, and if you want to find out if they'll make it out of this one, you'll have to come back for chapter... chapter 30.
That's... Yeah. That's... 100 Flowers Shame deserves so much better.
She does.
She does. Is she gonna get better, Quiva?
She's going to have to suffer more. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. And in my head, she's going off to live with Wallpaper Lady.
Yeah,
bringing the kids with her.
Yeah, no one is going to.
There's going to be some peer-led survivor support happening.
Yeah, no one's going to like treat her well.
yeah.
So there's a couple things in this chapter I kind of want to bring up. One is just point out this is like the first chapter in a very long time that just doesn't have Wukong in it at all.
Yeah.
Kind
of miss the bastard.
We're gonna have to rename the podcast.
Journey of the Monk and the Two Idiots.
Yeah, this is monkeyless journey now. Only monks, no monkey.
No monkey, only monks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I kind of wanted to read out those letters in full just because to make a point of how verbose they are and how fucking formal they are. And those are extremely formal. The entire book is not written like that, but it is how a lot of people talk in it, and I just kind of wanted to, you know, I want to make sure I'm appreciated here.
You are.
That I'm translating all this really formal stilted language and trying to rephrase things a bit more palatably.
So idiots like
and
me
entertainingly.
Can understand it.
Yeah, I'm trying to be true to the book and like relate it as best I can in this kind of translation of it I'm doing almost.
And we love you.
The language of this novel is actually kind of formal and annoying to go through sometimes.
We love you and we appreciate you, Kuga.
That's it. Not always. So actually, I'll just quote the Zhu Baji's last line of dialogue in the chapter verbatim, according to Anthony Yu's translation, which is, "Sha Monk, you come up and fight with him for a while. Let old hog go shit first."
Come up.
So sometimes they are just that late, that blunt as well.
Yeah.
I need to go take a shit. Bye.
Someone needs to write about scatological metaphors and Journey to the West. Someone probably already has. To be honest. But yeah.
Oh, and there's going to be a lot more to mine for that later on, don't worry.
Oh, fantastic. I'm going to keep a record. I'm going to start keeping a record of every single time shit is mentioned in Journey to the West.
Oh.
Yep.
There is something I think to look forward to in the next chapter. I won't give it away, but I think there's something that I was wrong about that you're going to be happy about.
Yay!
There's something that I misremembered. And I think you're going to enjoy it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just enjoy the satisfaction of being right, and anything after that is bonus. Yay!
Okay.
Thank you for that.
So, next time on chapter 30, we'll find out what happens with Yellow Robe, Wu Jing, Baji, Tripitaka, and what I was wrong about.
What was Quiva wrong about? That's the bit I'm looking forward to.
The mystery. Bye.
Bye.